UMH Podcast, el campus sonoro de la Universidad Miguel Hernández.
Hi there, here we are again with all of you in English in original version, now a special programs since 2010. This is UMH Radio and with you Pierre Vivas, talking with next to me the outstanding, amazing, dazzling Araceli Garrido. Welcome back. Hi Araceli.
Hi Pierre, hi everyone, thank you. I'm glad to be back.
Okay, so are we. And today we have also an impressive guest. Let's say we are very lucky to receive Andrea Polverini, English way.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
From Ancona in Italy, who's at the moment based in Spain, not only a teacher, or at least an ordinary teacher, because he employs neurolinguistics to achieve foreign languages teaching at their best. So let's welcome and introduce Andrea Polverini. We feel really blessed, fortunate, privileged to receive you in our radio station. Thanks for the acceptance and welcome to UMH Radio for an extraordinary program dealing with different ways of understanding teaching and learning.
Thank you, Pierre.
Okay, first of all, can you tell us, which is your opinion, the main difference between the so-called traditional way or manner of teaching and the one linked to neurolinguistics or neurosciences?
Okay, there could be many differences I could highlight. However, the one I usually like to begin with, and it's probably the one which is more vital and paramount importance to me is the shift of the way of the learning. What I mean to say is that in neurolanguage coaching, the learner takes complete responsibility for learners, complete responsibility for their learning. How do they do that? Well, they basically tell us what they want to learn, what's their motivation to learn English or any other language, and what exactly do they want to learn and what they want to do with that and how they want to reach their objectives. So that's shift completely the responsibility of the learning from the trainer to the learner, and it might be something straightforward. But believe me, try and ask, and it happened to me. Try and ask even an adult learner sometimes, what do you want to learn? And I had my question bouncing back to me. From the learner saying, "You tell me, you're a teacher,"
yeah.
and that's basically what the perspective one of the things we are trying to change with neurolanguage coaching.
Yeah. So we are talking about a different approach to the learning and teaching of languages. As you said, you don't define yourself as a teacher, more like coach. The main difference in the coaching, what would you say it is, the main difference in coaching and teaching? What's the difference?
Well, there are other differences I could highlight. And in neurolanguage coaching, basically we mix coaching techniques and principles on neuroscience. Through coaching, we know or we learn how to work through small, realistic, tiny objectives. And that's probably one other major difference I found, at least with the teaching as I knew it, is working through objectives, or learning to work through objectives, actually makes language learning measurable, which is something which can be difficult in language learning. You know, you're putting a certain amount of hours into learning a language, but you don't really know how much you're learning. You have a vague feeling of it.
Yeah. So it's about understanding how you learn. Yeah. Can you tell us about your background and how did you realize about the importance of neurolanguage? How did you get to be a neurolanguage coach?
Okay. Well, my background is in English language and literature, or English philology. That's how I started. And after uni, my first job as an English teacher came up in 1998. I was in Venezuela for a year teaching English. It was my first teaching job ever. And when I came back, basically there were I had a break for maybe 2-3 years, which corresponded to my period in Ireland, and then after that period, it was about 2004 when I arrived here in Spain. I resumed teaching, and since then I basically taught full time until now, and. I got to a point. I was back in 2018 when I decided to resign from the job I had in a language school in Villarreal, where I lived at the time, and I went freelance basically, and. And I'm grateful for all the experience I had during those previous years, but they actually gave me the chance to reflect on what I was doing. And I started to have that feeling that some of the things I was doing didn't actually sit with me anymore. And I wanted to, I don't know, I felt there was, that there must have been another way of doing things and helping people acquiring a language. And around that period, that's when I came across neurolanguage coaching. And when I looked further into it, I found out that the creator of neurolanguage coaching, an English woman called Rachel Mary Paling, had basically a methodology structured, which in a way was a good match for the direction I was going towards in an intuitively way. And that's when I started my training, and I am basically embraced that methodology, dealing with language learning, and it's been a major process of self growth for myself. As coaching, broadly speaking, actually helped me to understand so many things about myself, and so in the end, it wasn't just about languages or finding a better way to help people acquire a language. But it was there was more, much more beneath that.
Okay. How interesting. But what makes, according to you, this kind of teaching and learning so interesting and rewarding?
So interesting and rewarding. Well, basically, it's a methodology which, well, I could start from saying that from bringing in a little bit of neuroscience. Neuroscience tells us that there are no two brains which are the same, and basically, neural language coaching takes that into consideration. And takes also into consideration feelings, which is something I've never seen before been talked about in language learning. Feelings have an impact on our ability to learn and on our brain. And feelings can trigger a reaction such as the fight or flight reaction, which can definitely hinder our training, and that's also another point which I think is revolutionary in this methodology. But if I were to say it in a sentence, is the ability to or the opportunity to structure learning about the individual. That's what makes it different. And it makes a difference for real. You probably hear so many times talking about tailor-made learning, but this is exactly what it says.
Okay, I have been reading an interview from the magazine Brains, really a serious scientific one. You have invited to contribute. Mm-hmm. And as I understand, I think that you have the deep conviction that we all can learn once we are aware of our own uniqueness as human beings and learn to value and use our own abilities and intelligence. Mm-hmm. And this related to the languages can be amazing.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for bringing that up, actually. That's something I really believe in. And I think I'm quoting another coach called Gene Quick, and he always says that it's not important how intelligent we are, but how we are intelligent.
How interesting. I'll keep this sentence.
Yes, because you mentioned ability, and we all know how students or, in your case, you say clients or coaches. No?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lots of people think they don't have the ability of learning languages, or say, I'm not good at learning languages, I will never learn English or whatever, or other languages. But you said that we all can learn. But how can we make our students or coaches or clients aware that they can learn? How do they realize that? Because they can say, that's easy to say, but I don't feel I'm good at learning.
Okay. Well, the first thing I'd say that it's not so important what I believe, but it's important what the student or the coachee or the client, whatever you want to call him or call her, believes. And usually, when someone come to me saying I'm not good at learning languages, we could call that a limiting belief.
Yeah.
And usually the limiting belief has a reason to be there. It might be coming maybe from a remark this person had, when he or she was younger. But what I would do in that case, I would, and that's when actually life coaching comes into play with the coach's permission, I would probably investigate a little bit where that comes from.
Thanks, Andrea. I just want to say hello to Carmen Gonzalez. Hello, Carmen, which is in charge of all the technical side today. And she's got something for us. I think some music that Andrea brought us from Ireland. Because mm-hmm. you have been living in many countries, as you told us. And it's a band called, you told us, tre, but it's written tree, but they say tre.
That's what I, well, actually, that's a question I asked right yesterday to my girlfriend, and she said she heard them pronouncing this name, which doesn't seem to be English, like tre.
Sure.
Probably Irish pronunciation.
And it's a sweet song called Call Me Darling.
Well, the room was empty and the lights were low, and the band was playing something slow, and I was just about to call another beer when I looked up and she walked in. Well, she could have been a princess in another time, but she was dressed like a waitress in this dream of mine. And she was standing there beside me at the bar, and I said, hello, what's your name? She said, call me honey. She said, call me love. Call me sweetheart. Call me turtle dove. Call me darling Clementine. Anything at all, anything that rhymes. She said the world's gone crazy and the world's too full, and it's all so busy now, it's so impersonal. Just when you think you finally know somebody well, you wake up one day and find you've changed yourself. Well, me and my old man, we used to love to dance, to love to go out, we'd go out every chance. Now he just wants to sit at home and watch TV. He talks to himself, he never talks to me. He used to call me honey, he used to call me love, he used to call me sweetheart, call me turtle dove. He used to call me darling all the time. I could stay out all night, I don't think he'd mind. So we drank to each other, and we drank to life, to all the tired men and the poor neglected wives. We drank to the highs and lows, the in-betweens, to the years of plenty and to the lean, to every time we felt like walking out the door, but turned around again and came back for more. She said, call me honey. She said, call me love. Call me sweetheart. Call me turtle dove. Call me darling Clementine. Anything at all, anything that rhymes. She said, call me honey. She said, call me love. Call me sweetheart, call me turtle dove, call me darling Clementine, anything at all, anything that rhymes, anything at all, just make it rhyme.
Okay, Andrea, nice song. Thank you very much for bringing it.
My pleasure.
Well, motivation. Motivation is a key word in your method, in the methodology you are talking about, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. And motivation is something that our students in the traditional system, education system, are lacking of. How do you think we can implement this way of teaching and learning in our current education system and help our teens or children to be more motivated and enjoy learning?
Okay. May I start by addressing the motivational part?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to start by establishing the or highlighting the difference between reason and motivation. It's something I was actually told by Rachel when I started training as a neuro language coach, and I read she was making a difference between reason and motivation, and I thought, well, to me they are pretty much the same. So I asked her, just before starting the training, I had the chance to speak to her, and I said, so what would you say is the difference between reason and motivation? And she said to me, the reason is why you do something, which is important, but motivation is like is pushing yourself a step forward and visualize yourself how your life would change if you were able to reach a certain objective. So to go back to your question about young students, yes, they might be, at times, some of them might be lacking motivation. And what I'll try and do there, probably if I were with a young learner, despite his or her young age, I will try and understand, how English can actually change your life, or how any other language can actually change your life. How could you use it? And I'm quoting again another coach, Gene Quick. He says that every time we want to learn something, we should ask ourselves, why should I learn this? When will I use it? And why must I use it? So I think it can make a whole lot of difference asking ourselves these questions and helping maybe our learners to find an answer to this question. Because if they find their motivation to do something, I'm sure they will go great length to do that.
Yeah,
but it's not easy.
I agree. Yeah. It's difficult to help them find those reasons to learn.
But totally agree.
Yeah.
Okay, Andrea, I'd like to speak about something interesting. We were just talking a little yesterday to prepare this interview, a little to know more about you. And you told us about a face-to-face meeting called Impulso all'Armonia, Impulse to Harmony, with coaches, yoga teachers, and experts. Can you tell us more about it? Because I think maybe are we invited to it? Can we also, as teachers, traditional teachers, let's say that, assist to this, in my opinion, really interesting meeting.
Yeah.
Is it possible?
Definitely. Thanks for bringing that up. That actually is a workshop I'm going to organize on the 16th of September.
We'll keep the date, 16th of September.
It's a Saturday morning from 11 to 1, and it's in a center in Alicante called Impulso all'Armonia. And it's basically a workshop meant to inform people of what neurolanguage coaching is. And I'd be really grateful to have the two of you there if you
could. We're taking notes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And whoever is interested, the idea is basically to spread the word.
So definitely thank you.
You're welcome.
You made a list, a really interesting list, of 14 tips for a faster, more efficient and satisfactory language learning experience. And I felt a special curiosity when I read that list about helping memory with smells, because I think this is something we all can do, a way to help.
It reminds me, sorry, as I have a French background, about La Madeleine de Proust, Proust Madeleines. That reminds the author many things. He was an adult and thinking about a cup of tea and this Madeleine brought by his aunt. When an adult, he discovers again this smell, and many, many things came to his mind. And that's how began his biggest book,
yeah.
À la recherche du temps perdu.
The power of smells.
The power of smells, yeah. So can you tell us more about it, Andrea?
Well, we all know that we memories are linked to some smells, and we all have our personal smells which bring back our, you know, personal memories. Basically, what I the way I use it, there are apparently some smells which are able to recall, to retrieve memories better than others. And the one I use, for example, is rosemary. I use essential oil, and I burn, you know, in some water, a few drops of rosemary. When I work, when I need to use my memory, but to say a little bit more about it, I like to mention something I listened to in a podcast. It's related to memorization. When we try and memorize something, we tend to rely on the written word and on the sound, but our memory works on different levels, not only on these two senses, not only, you know, what we see written and the sound of it, but there are images. The brain likes, the brain thinks through images, and there are smells as well. So imagine when you, I'm going to give you the same example I've been given. When you think of the word wave, you see the wave, you hear the sound of the wave breaking on the shore, but there is color, so you see the colors of maybe the sea, but you can also smell you can also smell the wave, you can smell the salty water. So there are many many levels which, if we are able to use them, and that includes also smell, can actually help us retrieve some information. And that's basically what I think we could use whenever we try and learn something and we need to do some memorization work. Not only relying on repetition, on what we read, on the sound, but using smells, emotions. And that could actually help us, in my opinion, learn us more effortlessly.
Yeah, that's a way of moving from tradition to something really new and revolutionary. I think that not many people know about that, about this, the smells. So it's a good tip. We can bring some oils, essential oils, and help us remember.
Yeah, only 3 minutes left to the end. So have you another question or maybe some advice?
Many questions, I think. Many questions. This is really interesting. Well, I have just mentioned one of the tips, but you have more, 14 tips. So do you want to mention any tip in special apart from smells?
I'm writing everything Andrea is saying. You know, you see me. I'm a really interested.
We're teachers and learners.
And
always.
Learners. That's it.
Lifelong.
Well, what I would say probably a couple of things which are we don't actually talk about them when learning, but I think they are of really great importance, and they seem not to have much in common. You might think they haven't got much in common with learning, but the food you eat and the importance of sleep. Sleep is really vital for your memory, and also the food you eat. Some food are brain friendly food, and so take care of your brain, and that will in turn help you learning.
Yeah, we must feed our brain properly as
Definitely,
well.
Yes.
Well, Andrea, this has been a really interesting interview, really, really interesting, I think, for everyone, for teachers, learners, and any kind of person willing to learn. Thank you very much for being here. In my opinion, I would like to have more time to talk about this because it's really interesting, but we'll keep the date, and we will see you on the 16th September to know more.
Thank you, Andrea. Thanks again, and I hope to see you soon again in our studios in UMH Radio in our original version programs. Thanks, thanks, many thanks.
Thank you for having me.
UMH Podcast, el campus sonoro de la Universidad Miguel Hernández.